It's time for the only show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug DeFeller. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Paul. Thanks a lot for the intro. Welcome, everybody. Another great show today, and welcome to today's episode of the Coaching Perspective. Our topic for today is coaching transitions in the workplace, yours and others. Listen in as we talk about how to have a successful transition and, or if you're a coach, how you might help your clients by coaching them through a transition. But first, a couple of announcements. If you're listening to our podcast, then thank you for visiting our website, thecoachingperspective.com. And be sure to check out our archives for other shows with some great guests. And speaking of guests, if you'd like to be in the show, we're always looking for coaches, CEOs, and HR professionals to interview. So just send me an email, doug@thecoachingperspective.com. And if you've missed any of our previous shows, just go either to D. Gefeller, that's dgefeller.podbeam.com, or our webpage, www.thecoachingperspective.com. Well, you know, we've been coaching executives and business owners for 19 years now under the banner of the Coaching Perspective. Helping to create more effective teams is our primary focus, and we work with both existing and new management teams and project teams. In all cases, our goal is to increase the productivity of the team and the individual members. We also offer individual coaching from the top executive to the newest entry-level position, coaching for people who want to sharpen a particular business skill, and communication workshops. I'm a master certified coach, past president of the Orange County chapter of the International Coach Federation. Well, so much for the announcements. Now we can get down to the fun. You know, as I said at the start of the show, our topic for today is coaching transitions in the workplace. And I think that over the last 19 years of coaching, that somewhere between 30 and 50% of all of my coaching had to do with job transitions within a company. You know, this really surprised me when I realized this, and I just realized it this last week or so when I started preparing for today's discussion. And the reason it came as such a surprise to me, I think, is that because so often as a coach, I'm called in to coach something else that ends up being all about a transition. So transitions, you know, hide in many different costumes, in many different forms, and we don't always immediately identify that that's really what we're coaching on. And so I want to talk about that a little bit today. You know, also as part of the research and getting ready for today's show, I came across this. You know, people are always asking me what my coaching method is, and I've never really known how to answer that question. However, in preparing for today's discussion, I did spend some time trying to identify if there was any similarities in my coaching and handling the various transitions that we're going to talk about. And guess what? There are a number of steps that I take in all of these cases that are the same, although not necessarily in the same order every time, which was, you know, in some ways kind of a surprise to me. And I guess it's because I've been coaching so long that many of these things I sort of do intuitively and haven't really stopped to document what it is I'm doing or to realize it. They just, but again, they follow a pattern. So I thought I'd share with you some of the things that I do consistently when I'm dealing with transition coaching. And whether you're a coach or whether you're dealing with your own transition, I think these are steps that, you know, as a coach, you want to take your clients through. And as an individual, you want to kind of walk yourself through these things. So let me just highlight a few of those steps, and then we'll get into the juicy part of what transitions really are and what we can do about them. You know, the first thing is when working is when I start working with a client, I want to get him or her to identify what they see as the problem or the goal. And, you know, you can call it a problem. You can call it a challenge. You can call it a goal. I don't care what it is. It's all the same. It's what is the issue that we are coaching on? What is the issue that drove them to the coaching table? The other thing I want to do is I want to work with them to help get them to identify for me what they think others see as the issue, the problem or the challenge or the goal that we're talking about. Do other people see the problem the same? Would they describe it the same way that you or that my client would? And I'm going to use the term client here, and if you're not a coach and you're thinking about this for yourself, just substitute yourself for it rather than get hung up on the client terminology. So first two steps, what does the client think the issue is, and what does the client think other people think the issue is? Then I want to talk to the client about getting them to identify what is the part that they play in this issue. What is the role they have played in creating this issue or in the role they're going to play in solving this issue? So if the issue is a problem between two people, it isn't always the other person. You have some blame. What is your role? What percentage of the blame, what area of the issue have you really kind of created? So I want them to identify that role that they've played to date. And then we start to, the real challenge of the coaching here is to dig deeper to identify what the real problem is. And what I mean by that is that so often if I ask a client what the issue is, once we start coaching and we get into dialogue, I find out that what they said was the issue is really only a symptom of what the issue is. So the issue isn't that my nose is running and that I'm sneezing. The issue is that I've got the flu, and we can't just stop my nose from running. We need to cure the flu. So I want to really dig deep with the client, and this is easier said than done because many times for a variety of reasons, the clients have kind of blocked out what that real issue is, whether it's a problem or whether it's a goal. If it's a goal, you know, if it's a problem, they're looking at the symptom of the problem. I can't get along with so-and-so, when the real issue is you and so-and-so have a communication issue, or you've never treated them fairly, or you don't respect their position. So we want to get to that. If it's a goal we're talking about, then the issue here is what we're talking about the root goal, or is what we're talking about a result of dealing on the root goal? So in other words, many times people tell me, well, you know, the goal we want to work on is more profits. Well, you know, you don't just work on more profits. You have to work on charging more money per hour, or being more efficient in your work time, or having more clients to bill, or something else. So the issue is that we take both the client's perception of what the problem is, what they think other people think the problem is, dig a little deeper to identify what the real issue really is, and then we start to work with them in terms of not solving the problem, but what are the obstacles? What's in your way? What's kept you from solving this problem or achieving your goal? And then, and this is a step that I think gets missed way too often, is identifying very, very clearly what will life be like for everybody after you've solved this problem or achieved this goal. What is it going to be like for you, the client, if you solve this? Now, the reason this is so critical, and when I say critical, I want not just words. I want to know what is the emotion that's going to be generated when we've solved this issue or achieved this goal. Because if the reward isn't great enough, no one is ever going to stay committed to solving the problem. So we want to be real clear about what we're going to accomplish. And if we can't really clearly identify the benefit, this is probably something that isn't important enough to even be worked on. Once we've done that, sort of the last step in my short list of steps here, is creating a plan with measurable timeline and metrics with the client so that we can see how we're progressing. You know, most problems aren't going to be solved. Most goals aren't going to be achieved in a week, in one session. So I want to identify so we can see that we're making progress. What are the interim steps? And along with those steps, I want to make sure that we identify the celebration points and what we're going to do to celebrate. This is part of identifying how life is going to be different, not only after we solve the problem, but as we get incremental success in working towards the ultimate solution. So those are kind of the steps that I go through in coaching, and particularly in what we're going to now talk about in transition coaching. So I've kind of identified maybe four areas that I think are in many ways very different, but all have to do with transition. I'm going to call one the promotion. The second I'm going to call moving from working in the company to working on the company. The third I'm going to call getting ready to leave the company. And the last is going to work for a new company. So those are all really what I would identify as major transitions in someone's business life. Let's start out with the promotion. You know, as a coach, this usually shows up by a company asking me to help someone assume a new role. Sometimes this means they've not been doing well in the new position that they've been put in. A recent example of that in the last year or so was a new first-level line manager. I was asked to coach this manager that had been moved up from an area where they were technically proficient to now, okay, why don't you take charge of the department and manage the department? And I was asked to help them deal with the issues that were preventing them from being a good manager. And in our coaching, we identified sort of two major areas. One was they really didn't know what a manager did. They had not had great role models so that they could see, so that this individual, so that he could see what a good manager was like. So we had to spend some time in the coaching sort of identifying what does it look like to fulfill this role fully. And I think that's really key in any kind of promotion, is understanding not just what you're going to be doing day one, but when you are fully trained, fully experienced, and doing this job the way it needs to be done, what does that look like? And if you can't look at someone and use them as a role model, then you need help in identifying what it is you're going to shoot for. The second area of the coaching was, what are the behaviors, the attitudes that are keeping you from achieving those objectives, that are keeping you from being a good manager? So in this particular case, it was for this individual, he had trouble with what I'm going to say is crucial conversations. He had trouble being really blunt with people, of letting them know how he felt, about their behavior, about their performance. He didn't like confrontation, and he saw any conversation about performance as a confrontational conversation. And we had to really work to get this person to understand that you can have conversations about performance that are not confrontational. This person was had a fear of speaking out in meetings, a very big problem with public speaking. They had a problem with delegating. They liked to do everything themselves. They were used to completely controlling the effort that went into finishing a job, which was, you know, pretty logical speaking from where they were coming from. And sort of the last thing that we had to coach on was that they didn't understand the management perspective or the perspective of the managers above them. And I think this is a real stumbling block at all kinds of levels when we're coaching for promotion, is that does the person that's being promoted into this new level, do they understand how the people above look at the issues that you're going to now be dealing with at this level? Some of the things that you as the client may think are earth-shattering, they may look at as unimportant. Some of the things that you may look at as not too important, they may look at as being the key deciding factors as to whether you're doing a good job or not. So we had to look at all of those things, you know. Now, in this particular case, the ultimate result, which I'm going to call a success, was that after some coaching, this individual, he identified that basically he didn't like to manage. Now that he understood what managing was about and he understood the things that he had to change about himself, he said, hey, I'm not comfortable with this. This isn't me. This isn't who I am. I don't want to do it. Raise my hand, call everybody in and go, hey, you can have this management position back. I want to go back to practicing my technical expertise that I am comfortable with, that I'm so good at, and that you have certainly enjoyed the benefits of. Did the company benefit from this coaching? Absolutely. Years of frustration and eventual failure were all rolled up into a relatively short period of time. They were very quickly able, the company was benefiting because they didn't have somebody who sat in this job doing mediocre work or not good enough for a number of years, and then what do we do with them because they used to be a great employee and they've been around for a long time. You know, we've all heard those conversations. Instead, the company was presented with, hey, not only am I not doing a great job in this new role you've put me in, but I don't want this new role. So I think that was a win. When we're talking about promotions at the senior executive level, many times the coaching is part of the promotion package. In other words, it's pretty common these days when you promote a senior executive that part of the package is I'm going to give you some coaching to help you with this transition into your new position. And what I have found at the senior level particularly is that the job title does not always describe what the position is. And the job description, which we've talked about on other shows, and you may want to go back and listen to that on the podcast, but the job description, if there is one, frequently falls short of describing what you want the position to be today. So my coaching there usually involves a coaching for a conversation between the executive and their boss. And in some cases, it could be the CEO and the board of directors to really bring out and get on the table clearly what the expectations that each has of the other. And then once those expectations are understood, to, again, assign a timeline to those expectations, agree on metrics to measure progress on those, and be real clear about where we're going. You know, so many times I think that when I have been involved in those awkward situations where somebody has not fit in and not handled the promotion at a senior level well, it's because at the start, because they'd been around for a long time, just because they'd done something in another department well, or they had performed in a different branch of the company well, the assumption was that they knew what was expected in this new role, and they didn't. So that expectation needs to be clearly identified. So the promotion, to me, is a key transition that is not given as much attention as I think it should get. The assumption being that you're being promoted, you're getting more money, you're getting a new title, and the job is not much different from what you've been doing. Well, that is hardly ever the case. So I think it needs a lot of work. The second type of transition that I want to talk about is really at the senior level, or particularly the CEO level, is moving from working in the company to working on the company. And, you know, as a coach, I don't think I have ever been hired with this as an objective. You know, it was much more common for somebody to look for me as the coach to solve one of the symptoms of this problem. So they asked me if I can coach them on time management or on their life balance because they're working too many hours, or why they just can't seem to grow the company, or why no one else can do the job as well as they do the job. And, you know, all this issue was really pointed out really clearly in a book that's been around for quite a while. Michael Gerber said it well in The E-Myth when he said, you need to learn to work on the business, not in the business. And, you know, today's variation of this same theme is kind of what got you here can't get you there. And they're both referring to the tendency for entrepreneurs or CEOs to focus on the technical side of the business, the one that they spent all their time on that made the company what it is today. And that is not what they need to be doing. So when I start coaching in this kind of engagement, I usually start with working with the client to have them identify where are you currently spending your time. And if they don't have a job description, then we work on developing a job description that reflects what they're currently doing today. Not what they think they should be doing, not what somebody else thinks they should be doing, but what is it that they're really doing today? Now, as we work on that, frequently this involves redefining what their direct reports are doing or what their direct reports job descriptions are. And when I'm working with the individual in this kind of a transition of moving up to the issue of truly managing at a senior level, not managing activities, but in fact, I'm going to redefine it, not managing at all, but leading. You know, this issue of going from manager to leader, that's what we're talking about here. And to do that, the coaching involves primarily identifying the strengths and the weaknesses that the individual has and identifying how those strengths or weaknesses relate to the job, the leadership job that they're being asked to fill, and matching them up with the return on investment to the company of working in those areas. So what I'm talking about here is, let's say I move to a leadership role from being a manager, and one of my strengths has been I am a great contract administrator, and I really can read contracts well and identify weaknesses in the contracts that nobody else in the company is as good as I am in it. What we want to look at is that a strength that should be carried over into this leadership position? It was one that was important in my manager role, but is it one that should be carried over into the leadership position? And even if I'm the best in the company, let's assume I'm a 10 and we've got other people that are a 9, given what I should be spending my time on and given what the company is paying me, the issue becomes, does the ROI match up? Is it worthwhile for the company to have me work on those things? So that's what we want to work on there. That's identifying those strengths and weaknesses and balancing them with the ROI of where you are truly spending their time. I think we've got a commercial coming up here in just a minute. So let's just take a break there. I'm going to turn it back to Paul, and then we'll come back and talk about the other two areas of transition that I want to talk about today.
When it comes to pioneers in their respective industries, we all know the Apples, Starbucks, and Trader Joe's of the world. In the realm of recruiting, Decision Toolbox is the industry's best-kept secret. With 90% of their business from referrals and repeat customers, for over 20 years, Decision Toolbox's U.S.-based team of recruiters, sourcers, professional writers, quality personnel, and tech support has perfected a Six Sigma approach to talent management. No matter the size of the project, Decision Toolbox delivers incredible results. A cost per hire less than half of what contingency firms charge. With the winning candidate presented in an average of 14 days. All with a 12-month candidate warranty. With results like that, Decision Toolbox won't be a secret for long. Visit us at www.dtoolbox.com for more information.
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest, hire.
Okay, welcome back. We're talking about transitions, how to coach them or how to manage it if you're not a coach. And we've kind of talked a little bit about the promotion and what's involved in that transition. And we've talked about the transition at the senior level of moving from working in the company to working on the company. Well, what I think is the most difficult area to coach is what we're going to talk about now. That is the transition of getting ready to leave the company. This is where the owners, the partners, the founders, whatever you want to call them, that have sort of been responsible for growing and developing this company, have been the key rainmakers, have been the technical advisors, whatever it is, and they're now looking at, hey, I'm going to sell the company, or I don't want to work full time anymore. I want to only work one day a week, or I don't want to be involved in the daily management. I want to retire to a role on the board of directors or some other role other than the role they've been playing, which is one that is active in the daily operations. To me, this is probably the most difficult area to coach. And the reason for that is not that the coaching is difficult. It's that the client is difficult. And I don't mean these are difficult clients. I mean that from the client perspective, they usually assign a low priority and a low commitment to taking real actions in this area. Way too often, they are very good at giving lip service to the fact that they realize they're not going to work forever. They realize they have to back off and assign things to other people. But they just don't want to deal with it now, you know. And the key thing here as a coach is to get the, I'm going to call it the owner, whatever, for lack of a better term, and to get it the owners to identify what is the timeline that they're thinking about. When is it that you are thinking about being less involved, whatever that means? Is it in a year? Is it in 2 years? Is it in 3 years? Is it in 5 years? Whatever the time frame is, kind of my rule of thumb that I work with them on is cut that time frame in half. And that's the amount of time we've got to make the transition effective. Because the second half of that time frame is when you want to still be here and available to be involved, but you're becoming less necessary. Now, this is the backup plan. This is the insurance policy. The last thing anybody wants to do is on a Friday to say, by the way, I'm not going to be here Monday. You're in charge. Good luck. What you want to do is you want to have said, you're going to be in charge, and by the way, I'm still going to be here, and we're going to set up a system to kind of have me look at what you've done after the fact, or I'm available as a resource, but I'm no longer on the line in the real-time path, the critical path of making decisions, reviewing products, turning things out. So the key thing is to get this owners to identify what is the timeline, cut it in half, and that's what we've got to work with. Then we start to work on, okay, what is it that you want to be doing when you are less involved? Are you going to walk out the door and be not involved at all? That makes it relatively easy. That means somebody's got to take over everything you do. Or is it that you still, and this, I find this more and more common these days, because I don't care what age people are getting to be, that whatever they think is the retirement age, they're still too darn healthy and they enjoy what they're doing too much to want to just not be involved at all. So we start to define what would it mean to be less involved. Is it 1 day a week, 2 days a week, 1 day a month? And what is the role that you want to play? You know, I had one CEO that said, all I want to do is I want to be involved as the sort of the keeper of wisdom that sits in on the kickoff meetings of new projects or new product design or new client projects, and give the benefit of my experience to the group, and then I'm not involved anymore. In other words, I'm not responsible for implementing it. I'm not responsible for following up on it. I strictly want to take my years of experience, my perspective as the owner of the company for all of these years, and I want to have it available to you people who are now going to run the operations at the front end, at the key elements or the key decision-making parts of their job. That's one way to do it. Other people go, you know, what I really like to do is I like the technical thing. I like to make the big sales calls. So my involvement is I want to go with you, whoever you is, when you call on the big accounts. I want to be the image of the company at the trade shows. I want to be the guest speaker at these shows, whatever it is. So as a coach, I want to work with them to identify what is it that you want to do. Because, you know, as strange as it seems, they get to decide that. And they just, it's hard to get that across to them. It's like they feel guilty saying there's some things I don't want to do anymore. Well, let's focus on what you do want to do. Once they've identified what they do want to do, then you look at what they don't want to do, and you start to look at, okay, how is that now going to get done in the company? Are you organized in a way that we can just assign these things to somebody? Probably not, because those people are busy doing other things. So if you assign all your work to your number two person, then the number two guy's got to assign his work to the number three person. And, you know, you create this snowball effect of all of the work sort of rolling down the hill here. So the coaching of the owner as he gets ready to be less involved in the business really ends up involving other people. Sometimes the things that the owner wants to stay involved in are really not that owner critical, but they're things the owner just likes to do, you know? So we want to really identify what those things are. We want to help the owner get ready to leave the company. Now, the last area I want to talk about just briefly is going to work for a new company. And usually as a coach, I get involved in this after the fact when it's really too late. But I want to just talk about this. Most people don't put enough effort into interviewing the company that's looking to hire them, but instead they focus on getting selected. Let me repeat that. They don't put effort into interviewing the company. They put their effort into being interviewed, into winning the selection process. And what is it that you cannot easily identify from a company's website or their other social media or press releases or even from the first interview? What is so difficult to identify is the company's culture. And how do you find out what that is before you're hired? And why is that important? Well, there's an old saying that says, you know, we hire for skills and fire for attitude. This certainly shows the importance of finding out if you are a match for their company culture. So what are some of the things that you can do, that you and your coach can look at before you take that next job. Now, I do not specialize in coaching people in job transitions, but I end up so often on the other end of coaching people who've not done a good job of making that match that I've got my list here of four things that I think everybody should do before they take the job. One is insist on talking to people who are currently working at the company and try to get a mix of at least one long-term employee and maybe their most recent hire. Now, if the company isn't comfortable with you talking to their employees, then what does that tell you? Why aren't they comfortable with it? Maybe they aren't comfortable in the first interview. Maybe they aren't comfortable until you've negotiated everything out. But before they give you that hardline offer letter, before you agree to come to work, you want to do that. You want to talk to people who are currently working at the company and identify what's it like to work at this company. What's it like to be involved in these products or these services? What's it like to work for these owners or managers? In the interview process, you want to ask why the last three people in the company were terminated. You don't need to know their names or their position. You're just looking for, tell me, the last three people that you terminated, what went wrong between the hiring and the firing of these people that you had to let them go? Did you not do a good job of screening them, or did these people screw up somehow? Same thing. What? Tell me about the last three people that the company promoted. And if you can't think of anybody that got promoted, that's really not a great sign either. What did they do right? Did they do something that made them eligible for promotion, or was it strictly company growth that they just got pushed up because we needed somebody at the next level? Interview someone outside the company that deals with the company, especially if you can, the department you're going to be working in. This could be a vendor or a consultant. If you can do these four things, you're going to get a much clearer picture of what it is like inside this company. And I can't stress this enough. A good fit, a good place to go to work, to stay there for a long time, to be happy in the job, happy with the people you're working with, for them to be happy with you, is if you have a true cultural match. And that means that the things that make it a good place to work from the current employees and the current manager's perspective are the same things that to you make it a good place to work. You know, I have seen situations not where people were right or wrong, but where they were different, where the new hire, it was an absolute go-getter, human dynamo, talked so fast you could barely understand him, never sat still for a minute, tremendous producer, everybody in his last company loved him, put out more work than anybody else, and he absolutely didn't fit into the company that he was hired for. Because the company he was hired into was a company that was very methodical about how they made decisions. They talked things to death. They were very concerned with never making mistakes. That was sort of the culture of their company. They would rather miss an opportunity than to screw something up. And that just was not the cultural fit for this one individual. And how are they ever going to find that out? The company thought, this is a guy we need to hire. Look at the raves that we're getting from his last employers, at how productive he was, at how great he was. But you know what? After he'd been there for a few weeks, they're going, this guy's driving me nuts. He's always looking for something new. He always wants to do it different. You know, he never sits still. So you really want to identify this cultural match. So that's what I'm talking about today when I'm talking about coaching for transition, whether you're coaching yourself or as a coach, whether you're coaching your clients, is to identify that transition in the workplace is a big issue, and it's there more often than we realize when we're asked to coach. It's the key effort in promotions. What's the transition from one position to another? It's the key effort when a senior executive is moving from working in the business to working on the business, getting that perspective of a leader, not a manager. It's obviously that key issue when the longtime founders of the company are getting ready to transition to a less involved role, and that it is that all-important transition when you are changing companies and looking to step into a new place. How do you make sure that you aren't making any mistakes there? Well, that's what we've been talking about today. Thank you very much for listening. I think this this issue of transition is a key one that you want to devote some time to thinking about, to working on. Let me give you a reminder that tonight is the International Coaching Federation's Orange County chapter meeting at the Wyndham Hotel in Costa Mesa. If it's too late for you to make plans, then look to the March meeting, the second Thursday of the month. But if you are tooling around in your car listening to our broadcast and you have no place to go, head over to the Wyndham Hotel for the 6 o'clock meeting at the ICF Orange County chapter. Well, this is Doug Gefeller signing off, thanking you for all of your support, hoping that you enjoyed the show today, that you become more aware of the opportunities involved in transitions in the business place, and that our discussion has provided you with new ideas and information that you can use to identify and achieve your goals right now. Have a great evening.
You've been listening to the only show that looks at life from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller.